listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go, Giants! SF Giants! Let's go, Giants! SF Giants!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants, this is Torture Cast. Welcome, everybody, to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. My name is Willie Dills. This is episode 48. Of course, the Pablo Sandoval episode. Yes, the Panda episode. Took us a long time to get here. I'm excited to finally do an episode all about Pablo Sandoval. Actually, no. If you listen to the show, you know that's not how it works. But I'm, of course, joined by my co-host, my good friend, Mr. Chad King. Chad, welcome to the show, buddy.
Hey, pandemonium, you didn't throw yourself out of the window this week when the Warriors lost their second game of the series.
Well, yeah, but see, the second one didn't feel nearly as bad as the first one.
No.
Even though it was a loss at home, which I kind of expected the Warriors to just beat up on the Spurs at home a little bit. But good news is we tied it. We're going back to San Antonio, tied at 2.
They just have to take one out of two in San Antonio.
Yeah, we got to win at least one of the games in San Antonio, preferably this next game 5. But, you know, I kind of feel like this might go 7 now, and this is going to be a really good series all the way through. So it's looking like a lot of fun. We're really, we got a little grief last week because we talked about not only Warriors for a little while, but we talked about hockey for a split second.
I know. And listeners that don't give a crap about the Warriors and the Sharks. Yeah, okay. We get it. We understand.
But here's what you have Black to just put up with, just a little bit of it, and then we always will get to the baseball. We will always get to the Giants.
Always get to the baseball. Just put it on double speed and you'll be good.
Yeah, and you'll get through that. It'll be fine. We'll hold hands. It'll be great. All right, so let's go ahead and let's jump right in, dude. The Giants are in first place again, so all is right with the world. And not only that, the Dodgers are in last place, so all is double right with the world right now.
Yeah, it's been about a week of this. This is pretty nice.
Yeah, it's starting to feel like we're settling into this. This is seems to be the way it should go. Although I have a good friend of mine named Dave David's who I hang out with at the pool hall all the time. He's a really big Dodger fan. And he's such a nice guy, you know, I don't really like to rub it in or anything, so I kind of talk to him.
There's a few nice Dodger fans.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, there's a few.
He's one of them, and so I don't like to rub it in when I talk to him, but, you know, it's definitely, we understand that the rivalry is there, and even though we're nice to each other about it, we still he wants the Dodgers to beat up on the Giants, and I want the Giants to beat up on the Dodgers. But, you know, I got to feel a little bit for these guys because they have really run into some of the worst luck of any team in majors right now. And I'm fine with it. But aside from the fact that they spent all this money and so they kind of set themselves up for kind of epic failure by putting all this pressure on themselves as a team, they've hit a lot of random things, you know, the Granky thing, this is what happens. I mean, if you look at a guy like Don Mattingly, who is very well respected in the world of baseball, For a number of reasons. I mean, he was a great player, obviously, for the Yankees, and he's so far been a pretty good presence for the Dodgers as well as their manager. But right now, he is on the chopping block, I must say. I mean, if you're a fan of the Dodgers, the first place you're going to look right now, even without all the injuries and everything, is you're going to look at the manager, and you're going to say, this guy is not pulling his weight as the manager of this ball club. It looks to me like he seems defeated already. Like, he's basically just accepted the fact that this is just not their year, even though it's only May. And he's already mad at the reporters asking him questions. He's just super defensive in all of the press conferences and everything. And, you know, I've got to feel like at some point, if they don't turn it around, he's gone.
Well, you know, after the Giants swept him last week, he did come out with some pretty funny statements. Hey, granted, all of them were one-run losses. The Giants came back on them, you know, all three times. But he said, you know, there's a lot of positives to take out of this series. I like my team. They showed some gumption, you know, those kind of choice PC quotes. And it's like, dude, you just got swept by your arch rivals.
Yeah,
you're trying to find a silver lining? Really?
Yeah. It's, you know what? It's There's times to look for the silver lining, and then there's times to just kind of accept reality. And the reality is you got swept. Whether it was one run or not, you got swept. So, yeah, he's you know, I think his time is running out right now. It's a ticking clock over there in Los Angeles. And
it could be. Yeah. They don't turn around.
Yeah. I mean, look at the Lakers. Look at what happened with the Lakers this year. Now we're back on basketball. Everyone's going to like, double speed. Yeah. But I'm just making comparison. Has something to do with baseball here. But you look at what happened with the Lakers. The Lakers brought in all these big time, you know, these big names, big time talent, and didn't gel, didn't work. The coach was gone ASAP. I mean, obviously the players kind of had a little mini revolt on him as well. But you know, and I don't see that necessarily happening so far with the Dodgers. Obviously, we don't know what's going on behind closed doors, but I don't see that happening at least. But still, you know, L.A. teams kind of tend to have a short trigger when it comes to this stuff. Unless it's Tommy Lasorda, you know, Jackson. Like, these guys don't stick around for very long, right? These kind of epic coaches that come along every now and then, they can stick around. But it's a little bit of a quick trigger over there. And we'll see. We'll keep our eye on that situation and see how it develops.
Well, I hope Ned Colletti is sleeping well tonight.
Oh, man. Poor Ned. You know, that's... I got to say, that guy did a great job while he was here with the Giants organization. And having a number two like that, who is as smart as he is and is, as you know, well-respected within the game again, just like Mattingly, to have him go over there, make a bunch of moves, get basically the best setup you can get as a general manager in baseball, which is an ownership group that says, here, spend what you need to. We're giving you
Brian
the cash.
Sabian should be jealous of him.
Yeah.
But he's not.
No. He has no reasons to be jealous of him at all at this point. I mean, Brian Sabian gets everything he needs and more here. Obviously, we could probably throw a few more ducats at the team, but he seems to be able to field one of the top payrolls in baseball pretty much every year, ever since, you know, we kind of got the new stadium and everything got up and running. And, you know, he doesn't really have a lot that he can complain about. He's not the GM for the Royals or the Astros or somebody like that.
No, longest tenure GM in the majors right now.
And obviously he's found some success here. So even though you may look at Coletti's situation and say, yeah, you got the guys just chucking money your way. Do whatever you need to do. Look at Sabian's situation and say, do you want to trade with anybody else in baseball? No, I don't think you do. So, yeah, we'll keep our eye on that situation. We'll let you guys know how we think that's going. But right now, not going so hot. And, hey, I feel for the Dodgers fans a little bit, but not that much. Let's be honest. All right.
Very little.
Let's move on. Let's talk about the Giants. The Giants' rotation has actually started to come around just a touch here. Now, it still doesn't feel like the rotation we expected. I mean, we expected that we were going to be up against the Nationals as like the number one and number two rotations in the bigs, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we're not there at all. In fact...
But at least they have a better record than the Nationals.
Very true.
They have the second best record in the National League.
That's true. Yeah. So, regardless of, but you know, a lot of our wins have come out of the bullpen, just because of the nature of the games we play.
Oh my God! It's bullpen and offense. That's what's been carrying this team, no doubt.
But you look like the starters went 12 games without recording a victory.
Yep.
So you know, I mean, that's just the way the Giants have been playing baseball, though.
They've been turning it around a little bit. This is just 1 week, just 5 days. But, you know, before the last five starts, the Giants had only three quality starts in the previous 20. And, of course, a quality start, for those of you who need a refresher, is three earned runs or less in six innings pitched. That's a 4.5 ERA, by the way.
It's actually not. Yeah, you can do that all year long and not look like a good pitcher at all.
Exactly. You could have like 20 quality starts and still have a 4.7 ERA. Mm-hmm. So it's possible. But anyway, the last five starts, the Giants starters have had four quality starts.
There you go. And who is the guy who did not?
Yeah, we all know who that is.
All right.
We talked about it again the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, so. I know. We'll steer clear of that a little bit. We'll talk. It'll come up, I'm sure. It has to. But so even after a week like that, we're still 12th in the National League as far as starter ERA at 4.25 clips. So, you know, still definitely not what we expect out of this.
I mean, 12th out of 15. I mean, and we're almost a quarter through the season. This is, you know, it's getting into some territory that's a little concerning right now.
It is concerning. Absolutely, it's concerning because this is supposed to be the strength of this ball club. And clearly, it is a huge weakness to this ball club right now. We're still finding ways to win games. So it, you know, there's good and bad in that. The bad is this isn't what we expected out of these guys. We can't do this all year long. The good is we've been able to weather the storm while this is going on.
Oh, no doubt.
But, you know, you look at the last three starts, and we had Kane, Bumgarner, and Lincecum all pitch gems, basically, as part of our 3 out of 4 over the Braves. And, you know, we were really looking at Lincecum as a huge question mark, and obviously we still feel like he's a huge question mark. He's more of a question mark right now than Vogelsong. Right now you can kind of write Vogelsong in as, like, you know, a black mark on the starting rotation. Lincecum is kind of a mystery right now. You don't know from day to day which Lincecum is coming out there. And I actually looked. He's had eight starts this year. And literally he's had 4 bad starts and 4 good starts. I mean, I'm not talking quality starts, non-quality. I'm not defining him that way. So first start of the year, you know, not fantastic, but we win the game. Gives up no earned runs, 5 innings pitched. He had 7 walks in that game, obviously, so that was kind of whatever. But you have to overall look at it and say he didn't give up any runs. And giving up no runs is kind of the ultimate goal of a starter. You know, it's don't give up runs, yeah. Right? So got to chalk that up as a good start. Then he gives up 6 earned runs in 6 innings pitched. Then he gives up 4 earned runs in 5 innings pitched. Granted, we'd won all these games at this point. Then he goes back out there, no earned runs again, over 6 2/3. We win that game again. So now at this point, we've won all 4 of Lincecum's starts. So whether he's had 2 bad and 2 good, it feels okay. Then he actually pitches really well in a loss for us, a 1-2 loss to the Padres. That's the first time we've lost one of his games. Then he goes out and consecutive games gives up 5 earned runs in both games. And, you know, again, we're finding ways to win these games. We win one of these games 9-6. And then this last start, obviously 0 earned runs. We win 5-1. The only run was, it felt like a garbage time run, basically, in the 9th inning.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's really, you never know with Timmy right now what you're going to get. And he's had games where he gave up 7 walks, 4 walks, 3 walks, you know, like he's given up 3 walks 3 times. The strikeout numbers still seem to be there. He's gotten up as high as 9. But yeah, again, it's, you just don't know. It used to be, we used to celebrate Lincecum Day. You know, Lincecum's on the mound. It's win day.
Yeah, it's win day, exactly.
Now, you just have, you know, now you just cross your fingers and you hope. You hope like hell that he's going to figure it out that day. Although last start, you got to admit the signs were there. I don't know how much of that game you watched, but it was actually on Mother's Day. So I didn't get to watch much of the game, but I watched a lot of the highlights.
I was out with my wife, yeah, so I didn't really get to see it.
But from what I saw after watching, I watched the condensed game on MLB.tv, which is,
yeah.
if you don't know
I do
that,
like that. That's a yeah. really sweet way to watch a game.
Even if you don't get like the full package, you just buy the app, you still get the condensed game afterwards. And it's a fantastic way to watch a game that you miss because it just cycles. It's all you see is the action.
Yeah, it's like 20 minutes or less.
Yeah, you just see the outcome of every, basically, of every at-bat.
Every at-bat, yeah. Yeah,
so, I mean, I didn't get to see the full thing, but they'll, you know, they'll show, like, if he struck him out in 3 pitches or whatever, they'll show you that kind of stuff. But he looked sharp, and he looked like what he was doing was he was hitting, when he was throwing a strike, he wasn't throwing a strike straight down the middle. You know, he was hitting the corners. He was missing low. He was doing the thing that he always does with that splitter changeup that he throws, where that's just hitting the dirt. And it feels to me like he's really locking in with Posey right now. And they're getting over whatever the hell it is.
You noticed that, by the way? Because he had very few starts with Posey last year in the last couple of years. He had no starts with Posey up until the last, like, 2 weeks. And now he's had, like, 3 starts with Posey.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And,
so what's going on?
He settled in a little bit there. I think he's just given in. I think, honestly, someone in that locker room said, look, dude, suck it up. You guys got
to listen to
us. Yeah.
We complained about it. They said, hey, you know what? The public is perceiving us, you know, in this way. We got to, you know, just suck it up, Timmy.
Yeah.
Come on.
Whether or not you guys actually have some kind of beef or not, everyone thinks you do. And that's not healthy for this team going forward. So, but, you know, I mean, also, you think about it. You take Posey either out of the lineup completely for your starts or you put him at first base, where he may not feel as comfortable. You know, I mean, I think, honestly, Posey's a professional hitter who's not going to suffer because he's going to play at first base. But
no, not at all.
Again, I think he gets into more of a rhythm for the game when he's sitting there behind the plate. I think that's just his comfort zone. And you're going to get full 100% Posey. And plus, you got Posey playing defense for you as well. So you got better chances to throw guys out. You got better chances to block balls, better chances to frame pitches correctly. You give yourself a much better chance to win a ball game when you have Posey behind the plate. So there's definitely something to it. We've talked about it. We've talked this into the ground on this podcast, obviously, but it feels to me like whatever that was, that's over now. We don't have to talk about that anymore. We don't have to worry about that. And they're really starting to settle in. Some of the other starters are actually starting to come around as well. So although Zito and Bumgarner, now let's talk about their numbers real quick. These guys really haven't had serious hiccups yet. Bumgarner's 4-1 with a 2.18 ERA. Zito 3-1 with a 2.75 ERA. We expected this out of Bumgarner. We expected Zito to be better. I think a lot of us thought Zito's going to come out and have a solid year. But I don't think we thought he was going to be our second best starter at this point in the year.
No. Not almost a quarter through the season. No.
And this is really great to watch Zito have this kind of resurgence, especially right at the very end of this contract. You know, I mean, he's not going to get a big contract after this. He's just
won't. Well, no, and he's kind of like he's averaging out the balance here in terms of Vogelsong and a little bit of Lincecum, but mostly Vogelsong. You know, I mean, this time last year Zito had a 4.56 ERA, so, and you know, Vogelsong had the 2.75 ERA, so. This is another reason why it's kind of balancing out. They're just kind of swapping stats, if you will. So, you know, they're doing all right.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact is, if these guys are going to struggle, especially a Vogelsong, who you're kind of expecting to be, you know, I mean, honestly, none of us really expected him to come out and lead the NL in ERA for, you know,
like you did
six months out of this year or whatever, you know. But we did expect him to be a solid pitcher, somewhere in the mid threes maybe. He hasn't been there, so it's really great to see someone like Zito stepping up and taking on the job of being that guy who you can count on every time he goes out to the mound. And not only can you, at this point, I feel like I can count on him not only to do that, but to do everything else right in the game. I mean,
He's still leading the team in average.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he's bunting guys over. He's slapping. He's not only just slapping hits the other way, he's pulling them down the line, man. He's pulling them between the first baseman and the second baseman at this point. And it's just fun to watch this guy, you know, looking like the Zito that we always wanted to have. The three-time All-Star Zito, you know, Cy Young Award-winning Zito. So really, really fun to watch these guys have good starts. And Kane seems to be coming around. Now he's had, so far, what, two starts in May? Is that just two starts? And he's got two really, really good starts now in May. So we're starting to feel a little better about Kane. So really we're looking at one serious black mark in the rotation and then a question mark. And I can deal with that for a little while, as long as that doesn't last the entire rest of the year. So, Chad, what are Kane's actual – you have his numbers here, right?
Well, his last two starts, he's only given up three earned runs over 15 and a third. That's a 1.76 ERA. His overall ERA is still hovering just above 5 at 5.04, but, I mean, it was well above 6 or 7.
Well, 5.04 you can whittle down pretty quick. I mean, I think with a couple more really quality starts, and we know what Kane's capable of, he can get that under 4 pretty fast. And so, you know, give him another couple weeks here and we'll see where he's at.
Well, you know, what's interesting is we talked about this last week and the week prior is that we still had most of our questions about Vogelsong, even though Kane had as bad or worse stats than Vogie. It's kind of like, well, we know what Kane is. He's always been the horse. He's always been the quality pitcher. He's just hitting a little bump in the road. We know that Vogie's been the journeyman. He's had his struggles throughout his major league career. He's pitched in Japan. He found this, you know, renaissance, this resurgence over the last 2 years. So when you see him kind of fail right now, I think there's a historical perspective of like, boy, is he sliding into what his past performance has indicated that he's, you know, capable of sliding into, as opposed to Kane, who you're like, we've never seen this from him. This is just a blip on the radar. It's just a really bad start to the season, as opposed to a bad streak in the middle of a season that really doesn't affect your ERA too much. So he's going to be fine.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what's happening, because Kane has now started to right the ship. He's had two very, very good starts in a row. And Vogie hasn't.
Yeah.
No, he's continued the same trajectory.
Absolutely not. Yeah, you're very correct on that. And, you know, I think, again, it comes down to when Kane struggles, he's built up enough of a reputation here that we're not gonna sound the alarms, you know. When Lincecum struggled, we didn't sound the alarm. It took a full year of it. Before we said, holy crap, something's really wrong with this guy, you know. And you know the beauty of, though, when you watch Lincecum pitch on Mother's Day was – how much the crowd was behind that guy still. I mean, yeah, if you think that SF has lost any love for Tim Lincecum, you're absolutely wrong, because he's he's still as popular as he ever has been here in San Francisco. So everyone's just rooting for this guy to pick it up, and that's all we really care about. If he leaves and never had gotten there, we're still going to fondly remember him striking out 14 Braves in Game 1 of the NL.
Game 1.
Yeah, yeah. DS in 2010. So his position as a Giant and a Giant favorite is solidified, but we all just really want to see him do the things we know he's capable of. So
yeah.
All right, so let's real quick talk about where we are standing compared to this time last year. In the NL West. So right now, currently, what's our record, Chad?
We are 23-15, 8 games above 500, 2 games ahead of the Arizona Diamondbacks in first place. And last year, when we won the World Series, the Giants were 19-19 and even 500, and amazingly 6 games back of the Dodgers. So not only is that an 8 game differential in terms of standings, because we're 2 games up now, but we are 4 games ahead of last year's pace if you just go team to team, Giants to Giants.
Wow.
So I mean, this is good stuff. I mean, you know, we're 6 games back of LA at this time of last year. We won the World Series, so it's looking good.
Yeah, it's looking real good. This is definitely where every team in the majors wants to be positioned at this time of the year. You obviously can't win the whole thing yet, but you got to get yourself into a good position so that you don't put a lot of pressure on your team going down the stretch. And this is a good place to be. You know, we're still a little ways out from the All-Star game, so we just got to keep it up for a little while longer. And let's talk about what we just did recently, which has obviously been a good week, good 10 days for us. We lost 2 out of 3 versus Philly, which was a little unexpected, honestly.
Unexpected, but tempered by the Atlanta series, which I thought we would only get 2 out of 4 at best.
Yeah, I definitely considered a split with Atlanta to be fine. I was okay with that. I was not expecting a sweep or anything. I was definitely not expecting 3 out of 4 either. I was saying, hey, we split with these guys, we did our job, and we would have still had a 6-4 homestand if we had done that. Instead, we take 3 out of 4, especially if you lose the first game of a 4-game series. You take 3 out of 4. I mean, you basically swept. You know,
yeah,
think about
it. Three in a row. Yeah.
So we ended the homestand 7-3, and that has to feel good. Now, Philly, I mentioned last time that they've kind of reloaded their lineup. They're still not a good team the way they used to be, but they're dangerous, you know. So anybody could lose 2 out of 3 to Philly, but I expected a little bit better out of that. But you know what? All that's fine because you sweep the Dodgers, and that makes this homestand look a lot better once you get to the end. So
yeah, it was kind of interesting. I was listening to KNBR into the third game of the Philly series in the morning. Kevin Franzen, San Jose native, he went to my high school. I'm a little older than him, but so we didn't overlap. We missed each other by a couple of years. But so they interviewed him in the morning. He actually came into the studio with headphones, with Murph and Mac and everything. You know, he's a Sharks fan, Warriors fan, Niner fan, Giants fan, the whole thing. Went to my high school, went to San Jose State. But he was saying, he's only got 24 at-bats this year, but he loves Zito. He has a good connection with him. And they were talking about his start that day. And he's like, I think Charlie's going to start me today, but I'm not sure yet. And, they said, dig in the box against Zito, your old buddy. He's like, he's got a soft curveball and all that. They were talking some shop. It was pretty cool. But he did get the start, and he did hit a home run off of Zito that day. It was amazing. He actually hit it like 4 hours after the interview with Murph and Mac. So in a way, I was kind of pulling for him. But of course, the Giants went up, 3-1, I think, in the ninth inning. And Franzen was the only run that the Phillies had scored that game. But of course, Romo gave up 2 runs with that 2-run bomb in the ninth inning, because unfortunately he walked someone ahead. But, the Giants pulled it out and won it anyway. So it's kind of a win-win. It's like you see your local boy do good. Giants still win.
We're
salvage 1 game out of 3. It's all good.
Yeah. No, that was, honestly, and when you lose the first two and you win, if you're going to win one out of the three, you win the last one, right? I mean,
it feels better than winning the first one and then losing the next two. I hate that so much.
I know.
When you win the first one and you're like, all right, we're going to take two out of three, no problem. And then they lose two out of three. You're like, what the heck?
But
then
you salvage one out of the,
you
know,
you salvage that last game. You're like, yeah.
Hey, all right, no problem.
All right, we got it. No problem.
Put the brooms away. Yeah, no, totally. So, that was definitely, I mean, that was a fun game all around, even though we had the Romo blip there. The negative Romo bomb is what we call that. But also, here's a weird stat. The Giants, this is a very weird stat. The Giants have the best batting average in the National League.
When I looked this up, I had to actually check two sites.
Yeah.
Because I didn't believe it, because
something's got to be wrong here.
Colorado always seems to be at the top because of their home park. And no, indeed, the Giants have the best batting average in the major leagues, or in the National League.
National League,
of course, you know, Atlanta gave up how many runs the last three games? So,
yeah.
Thank you, Atlanta.
Yeah, no, they definitely helped us out. I mean, we had some big, I mean, the 10-1 game. You know, by the way, I got offered tickets to that game. Really nice tickets about 2 hours before game time. I was supposed to go play a pool tournament. And then I go to the pool tournament. The pool tournament on the site I looked at said it started at 11:30. I get there, it had started at 10.
Oh.
So I didn't even get to play in the damn thing, and I turned down tickets because I had said I was going to play in this tournament.
Yeah,
and
that's not good.
Then the Giants go on to win the game 10-1, and it's just like one of those party games, you know?
Yeah.
And, God, that just made me so angry. I mean, there's... Free tickets are one of those things you never turn them down. You just don't. When you get offered free tickets, you go.
Surprised you did.
Well, the problem was I made a commitment. I hate breaking commitments, you know? And it was one of those
damn
things
morals.
Where I just had to kick myself in the ass afterwards.
Yeah.
Then, obviously, because I missed the tournament, I just went and played pool just at the pool hall for, like, no reason, just to play. Yeah. And was totally into it and playing like crap because I was just watching the Giants game the whole time.
Sure.
So, yeah, I lost all the way around that day. It's all good.
Sometimes I wish I had your life, Willie. I know I have a family and everything, and I'm all happy, and it's like I got the white picket fence. But at the same time, sometimes I wish I could go out and, like, deny Giants tickets to go play at a pool hall to watch the Giants game.
Yeah, yeah. It's not bad, actually.
Opportunity.
It's really not that bad. You're right. all right. I know I'm complaining.
Of course, you might die alone. So
I may die alone.
There's,
you never know.
There's that.
Yeah, it could happen. It could happen. So that's pretty ridiculous, Dad. The Giants being, I mean, talk to us in 2011 and tell us that that's going to happen. I mean,
yeah, this is stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, to think that if the Giants could have their 2011 or 2010 staff,
I know, man, point, I know.
The Giants would be like freaking 25 games over 500 right now.
We'd be destroying everybody who came across our path.
It'd be stupid.
Yeah, yeah. It would be one of those things where people would be like, God, I hate the Giants. I just hate them so. Well, I guess it's kind of like that anyway, but.
Yeah, it is.
But I mean, it would be like when the Yankees were in their heyday, just winning everything all the time. And they had the best pitchers, the best hitters, and then they also had the best closer and the best, you know. Yeah. It would be like that right now. But unfortunately, we can't seem to put it all together at the same time. But, you know, we'll put it together at the right time, I think. I think that's really the key, right? Put it together at the right time. All right, so let's move on to our big question here. A big question here is, can Lincecum get this going? Can Lincecum do what he did on Mother's Day over and over and over again? Can he find that consistency? And what do you think, Chad? I mean, can he? Is this – we talked about, we thought he was done on this show, on this very show.
Now, if it was against the Marlins or the Astros, I'd say, you know, whatever, chalk it up to a bad team. But this is against the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it wasn't like it was a Houdini act where he had bases loaded every inning.
No, it was shutting him down. Yeah.
Two hits, three walks, so that's five base runners. You know, the walks are still a huge issue.
Yeah.
But that's five runners in seven innings, and he had seven Ks, and his stuff was amazing by all accounts.
Absolutely.
Now, granted, I didn't watch the game. I only saw the highlights. And he was still only hitting 92 on the gun. But his fastball location was good.
Yeah. But 92 on the gun is plenty for him. He doesn't need more than that, you know?
No. And, I mean, Maddux didn't throw, you know, more than 91.
Yeah, no, I think Maddux had one season of over 91, you know, and that was his rookie year. And then from then on out, it was lower than that. But here's the thing. I mean, He throws 111 pitches and he throws 65 strikes. So it's a fairly decent ratio. But he drops his ERA almost a full, I mean, over a half a point, you know, 0.7 points almost basically. So it's just a huge game for him, and seven strikeouts, you know, it's just one of those things where he looked like the way he's supposed to look. And we can still get these performances out of him, obviously. So they're there. They're in there somewhere. We just need him to figure out how to do that every time and not have these games where, again, it just looks like focus, doesn't it? I mean, what can make a guy be this
different?
It
just seems mental. It really does.
Yeah. You can't blame this on everybody who says, oh, he's lost the fastball. No, there's no way, because the fastball is fine.
It's not the velocity.
It's not the
velocity. It's the location.
Yeah. And how do you miss location? You miss location because mentally you're in the wrong spot. You're in the wrong arm slot. You're in the wrong mechanics. You're doing something wrong that you normally wouldn't do if you were feeling it, you know, if you were in stroke. So basically what's happening with him is he's just got to figure it out. He's got to get in there and he's got to find a way to maintain focus throughout a full, whatever, 100 to 115 pitches every five days. And obviously it can be done. Obviously it can be done. So while we both said that we thought Tim Lincecum is done, he's not going to ever be a premier pitcher again, you know, I'll eat my words, and I would gladly eat my words if he could show me that he could do this.
Oh, man, if he does this, you know, he does this more than several times this year, I will eat my words. But, you know, every pitcher, even, you know, the Koufaxes and all these guys who kind of were past their prime, they have on occasion, you know, a vintage start. So hopefully this is not what that is. Hopefully this isn't just dumb luck. Hopefully
he can
rekindle this 2 out of 3 starts or, you know, 2 out of 4 starts. And, you know, he keeps his ERA under 5 or 4.5 this year, because that's going to be huge.
Yeah, but he's not, you know, I mean, like when we had Randy Johnson here, you know, at the age of 41 or 42 or whatever, and he had a couple of pretty typical Randy Johnson starts, couple throughout the entire year.
That's a great analogy.
You know, but this is Timmy at the age of, what, 28? You know, I mean, that's, he can't be satisfied with that type of situation at this point in his career. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you still have to, this should be the time when he is, you know, he is Cliff Lee. He is, you know, Roy Halladay from 2 years ago. You know, he's the guy. He's doing it all the time, every time. You know, he should be at that point right now. And he's not. Yeah, he's 28 years old. There you go. So it should be like him and Verlander in the conversation for who the best pitchers are in baseball. And based on what he showed us coming up. And it's just not, it's not happening right now. So hopefully that is what happens at some point. And I want to eat my words so badly. I so want to eat those words. All right, let's talk about the Giants All-Star Game dark horses. Because pretty much we can pencil in Posey at catcher, right? I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Even
I
if
think
Posey,
after his MVP, it's done.
Even if his stats don't match up with, you know, somebody else as at the catcher position, he's got enough cachet at this point.
McCann was kind of like the favorite for so many years, but he was injured. He just came back. Of course, he had two bombs against the Giants, so that didn't help.
Well, but I think those were his first and second home runs of the year. So
that's what I mean. He just came back and he, you know, bomb. You have Molina. He's not having a stellar year. So
no. And Yadier would be the other guy, I think, who would be the biggest competition in the National League. So.
Yeah, so I think after the World Series and the MVP, I think Posey's a lock.
Yeah, so we can pencil him in as the starting catcher. But let's talk about who we think these dark horses might be. Because, again, you know, the Giants have had several All-Stars. And Kane, he probably would have said we could pencil in, but, you know, gives up a bunch of runs in one start against the Cardinals.
Not this year.
Suddenly he's not really in the picture anymore.
No, he won't be the starter this year.
He won't be the starter. Unless Bochy grabs him because he's gotten real hot before the All-Star break, I don't think he gets there, period. You know, it just doesn't look like that. So, obviously, Bochy being the manager, we're going to see a couple more Giants on the team.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, that's just what you get to do.
That's what happens. That's what they did 2 years ago.
Yeah. You know? So, let's talk about who we think deserves to go as kind of our dark horses. I've written down the 5 names here I think are most likely. I don't know if you got any besides this, but we'll just kind of go through these guys and say what we think. I think Sergio Romo definitely has a strong case to make this year. Just, you know, he's among the league leaders in saves already. And he's kind of showing that, yeah, he does have what it takes to be a closer. He's had
and he's never made it before. Games. So
yeah, he's never been there before. And he would be, you know, honestly, he would be a media darling at the All-Star game. I mean,
oh, yeah,
he would everybody be would love to talk to this guy. And he would be like a kid in a candy store at the All-Star game. He would have a blast. So I'm really rooting for him to go.
Yeah, he's probably a Bochy selection.
Yeah, I think so. And his numbers would support him being there. And I could easily see him end up pitching the ninth inning. You know, I mean, honestly, like,
yeah,
if he continues to put saves up at the clip he's been putting them up at, even with his couple of rough patches here and there, which actually are not that much. You know, you look at some of the best closers in the game have had much rougher seasons than he's having right now in his very first time ever doing it. So,
yeah, well, Wilson was the closer 2 years ago. So,
yeah, exactly. Now, Hunter Pence would be probably my second guy that I would say is making a real strong case for himself this year. The average hasn't quite been there, but he's got real hot for a little while, and he's got a good amount of home runs and RBIs right now at this point in the year. And he looks very capable of continuing this pace all the way up until the All-Star game. If he does, I think he definitely has a strong chance to go. What do you think? Do you think, is there too much competition in the outfield for this to be a possibility?
Yeah, I think he's not going to be voted in. This is definitely a coaching,
not voted in for sure. No,
this is an injury replacement.
No, I think Posey is the only starter, honestly.
Yeah,
I think all of these guys are going to be either injury replacements or coaches picks.
Yeah,
but I think Pence makes a real strong case to be able to go. Now Scudero, you look at second base and. With Hanley Ramirez at, well, obviously Hanley's playing third, but we got who else really is his major competition over at second base?
Right? You have like Brandon Phillips.
Yeah, and that's pretty much it, right?
Yeah,
so you got to have a couple of guys there. So Scudero batting over 300 at this point.
Yep. Yeah, he has no makes power, but he's got the contact.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, that clutch hitting yesterday.
So. No, I think that's his first home run as a Giant. By the way, did he hit one with the Giants last year?
I think so. I'll double check that.
I got to check that because he only hits a few a year. So.
No, he's never been a guy with big power. But but he led. I think last year he led the National League in singles, which is kind of
that wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, he led the National League in singles with 147. He led the National League also in at bats per strikeout. We all know about that one. He led the National League in sacrifice flies. He had. By all rights, a fantastic 2012 season, and right now he's batting over 300 again. So, even though he's scuffled pretty badly at the beginning of the year, he came on strong.
Yeah,
so.
Well, what's his? He's got like a 13 or 14 game hitting streak, but like 12 of those games he's had two hits.
So Scudero hit 7 home runs in 2012, 3 of them for the Giants.
Okay, he did hit 3.
Yeah,
okay.
And 4 of them with the Rockies, which. Those could have all been in Colorado.
Yeah. So. It'd be pop flies in Colorado. And
yeah, exactly.
Out,
not a lot of pop, obviously, but 7 home runs in a year. I mean, that's, he's had as many as 12 in the past. So,
yeah.
Not a big power guy, but you don't need him to do that. He's your two hole. So, but, again, like, I think, second base isn't a super strong position in the National League. And to me, I think he could easily be the guy that ends up going. So, obviously Brandon Phillips wears the crown when you're talking about second baseman in the National League.
I think he's going to be the starter.
Yeah, no, that guy's definitely a perennial all-star at this point in his career. So the other two here, we're looking at starting pitchers, and I think Bumgarner's making a really, really strong case.
Oh yeah, he's league leading ERA. He's up there.
Yeah,
like
Clayton Kershaw
to
me is going to probably be the guy who might end up getting the start. At this point in the year, because he's so good.
He's pretty sick right now.
But Bumgarner, let's say Kershaw has a couple off games and Bumgarner keeps this up. You could be talking about Bumgarner instead. So
you could, but I think he's going to be on the team.
Yeah, I think he will be as well. I mean, I think he deserves it. He's so young, but he's got a bunch of years now under his belt at the major league level for a guy of his age, and he's never really had an off year. And he's always been consistent. So, and then the last guy I'm looking at is a Zito pick. Again, this would be a coach's pick, but this would be kind of one of those fun picks. Like last year, it was of his Giants career, maybe last year of his contract, blah blah. And then finally has this resurgence after this terrible experience as the San Francisco Giant after three all-star picks with the A's. It would be a fun story, and I think the media would really enjoy that one as well, talking about Zito finding a way to turn his career around, you know? And he's going to have to do this for, you know, another month and a half or whatever, but he could do it. I think he could do it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, I want to throw in another pick is Pablo Sandoval.
Oh, there you go. Good. Thank you.
Well, I mean, if you look at just third base,
yeah,
he is fourth in average,
mm-hmm.
and he is number one in RBI, number two in home runs. So, that I mean, just seems, right there.
Yeah, that seems like all-star numbers to me. And also, he was the guy last year. So, not only the guy last year who went, but also the guy who got an RBI and, you know, played well for the National League All-Stars. So,
oh, what, he didn't he go like 3-for-4 last year?
Yeah, and that was only his first time there, right? He did not go his rookie year or whatever.
No, that was his first year. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So now, Pablo,
it was his hit there. That really locked in the Giants' home field advantage.
That's true.
To be honest.
Yeah.
He hit that 3-run double off of Verlander. And then, of course, ended up hitting 2 home runs off of Verlander. Pretty incredible.
No, absolutely.
Poetic
Pablo,
justice.
Pablo, I don't know how I did not put him on that list, but thank you for pointing out that huge mistake.
Granted, he may not be voted in. It might be David Wright or whoever, even though he doesn't deserve it at this point.
Well, Wright is kind of the guy who just gets voted in because he's the name at third
base. Well, you know, it's one of those things. Like, think about this. Wright, 295. Pablo 320. Wright, 5 home runs. Pablo 6. Yeah. Wright, 24 RBIs. Pablo 26. So Pablo has Wright in all three major categories. So it's like, okay, well, but again, you know, here we go. We're dealing with media. We're dealing with fans. We're dealing with
New York
who
fans.
People are used to voting for. So, and I know last year there was an issue with Wright actually having better numbers than Pablo, to be honest.
Yeah.
And Pablo got the vote. So we'll see what happens this year. See if that carryover effect, if there's any kind of, reject or reflex vote, I guess, from the New York base, you know, saying, okay, Pablo, you're not going to take it this year. But even if he doesn't get the vote, I think Bochy's going to take him.
No, absolutely. I totally agree with that. The one thing that he doesn't do that David Wright does is take walks, and that's, you know, pretty much it. But Pablo, Pablo's got him in every other statistical category pretty much. So,
yeah.
I definitely think, you know what's funny, though, is actually he's got a lower WAR than David Wright. But the other guy who statistically could potentially be there is Michael Young, but he's kind of the forgotten man right now in Philadelphia. He's just, he's not a draw name. I don't think he goes. So, yeah, I think you're looking at David Wright and Pablo Sandoval.
Michael Young only has 9 RBI.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's it, and one home run.
Yeah, he's batting .310, but
He's batting .310, but that's still lower than Pablo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and Pablo's got almost almost exactly three times the RBI and mm-hmm. 6 times the home runs.
Yeah,
so,
and you look at the next name on that list, basically, and you're looking at Betancourt. You're looking at Polanco. There's nobody else.
No.
So yeah, Pablo's there.
You got Wright and Sandoval. That's it.
Yeah, Pablo's there for sure. All right, that's a good call, man. Good call. All right, so let's move on. Let's talk about let's do some armchair manager here, and let's talk about the bullpen a little bit. So, Chad, you've got a question to pose. So let's hear it.
Yeah. So I always have a problem with his name, Gaudin.
Godin, I believe.
Godin.
Correct. Yeah.
Godin.
Godin. I think it's Godin. Yeah. I mean, that's how you know all the announcers say it. So I figure that's probably right.
Well, yeah, but the way they pronounce some of the Spanish names are pretty funny. No, Gaudin, he's a journeyman. He's in his 30s, almost as old as I am. But he's been rock solid this year. I mean, he's been an amazing addition, but he's one of those guys, he's very sneaky. You don't really realize how good he is until you look at his stats.
Yeah.
He's not overpowering. He's not flashy. He doesn't say a lot.
No, but his position in the bullpen right now is the exact position that gets no flash, you know?
Absolutely. He's long relief.
Yeah.
He's got the most innings pitched besides the starters.
Yeah.
So as far as the relievers, he has the most innings pitched at 21. He's leading the team with a 1.27 ERA. He's only given up 15 hits and a 195 batting average against. And he has 21 strikeouts in those 21 innings. So,
yeah, so strikeout innings.
This dude has been money.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's been money and only three walks.
Yep.
So
he's got a lot of movement on all of his pitches. And we talked early on about how we thought he was a great pickup for the Giants and something that was going to solidify that bullpen. And, you know, honestly, here's the thing. We looked at you look at the guys we have in the bullpen, and we always had a lot of strength towards the end of a ball game. You look at the 7th, 8th, and 9th innings. The place where we were always kind of struggling was finding that guy who could fill this role and fill it well, because we were looking at Mota, you know. And Mota, yeah. Granted, Mota could potentially have an amazing outing at any moment. But he could also just blow up and just completely screw the pooch at any moment as well. So when you're talking about who's going to give you a bunch of innings in the middle of a game when you need them, you really only look at Godin right now. I mean, maybe Machi, maybe Contos, but he's the guy right now who's going to do that for you. So, yeah. You know, your question is, does he belong where he is, or should we move him back as part of that core group of guys that close games out for us, which is, you know, Santiago Casilla, Sergio Romo, Jeremy Affelt.
And Lopez
and Javier Lopez, yeah. So these are kind of the guys that we kind of cycle through those guys to finish out a ball game. Does he deserve to be back there? I think, yes, he does, but at the same time, who does his role, you know?
Well, I mean, you know, it's a good question to pose, but at the same time, it's a good problem to have, because you have, you know, Lopez and Affelt, who are your lefty specialists. And I think, you know, those guys only come in for one or two batters. So I think, you know, those guys leave. You have to leave untouched.
Yeah,
they come in for those guys.
And none of those guys right now at this point, minus Affelt, are having poor enough seasons.
Well, that's the problem, right?
That exactly. You would say that they have deserved, like they're losing their spot. You know what
and
I mean?
And Casilla, you know, he's got a 2.something ERA.
Yeah,
he's
2.12
really
or something.
Good,
yeah.
So,
and Casilla's the guy.
And it's not that you're going to say, oh, a guy who has 21 innings pitched, he has a 1.27 ERA. Well, statistically, it's better than your 2.12, therefore you should be pitching. That's not my argument. It's a tough call to make. So I think, you know, for Godin, you have to just say, you know, hey, buddy, you're doing a great job. Keep it up. But everybody in front of you is doing just as good of a job.
Yeah. You know what's funny is somehow Santiago Casilla has gotten this reputation among San Francisco Giants fans that he's unreliable, right? Based on one stretch where he had to step in as the closer. That is reason that people have this perception. I've been at games where he comes into the game, people go, oh, God damn it. Here comes Santiago Casilla. And I'm like, do you know he had a 195 ERA? Follow that up with a 1.74 ERA, and then the year that you say that he shit the bed was a 2.84 ERA. Do you realize that those were his numbers throughout that? So while you may remember that game you went to where
they remember
had
the four blown save or whatever.
Yeah. He had six blown saves. And then he also had 25 saves. So yeah, the six blown saves were all in one stretch of time. We had like a blister or something during that period of time. And
it was the blister.
And he was pitching poorly. So he needed to not be that guy because of a health issue. So to me, it's like it's one of the most undeserved reputations of anybody on this Giants squad. I love that guy. I think he's a fantastic pitcher. He's got such sharp breaking movement.
Nah, he's a good He's a great setup guy.
And he's got a huge fastball with a ton of velocity. He can blow by almost any good fastball hitter. It's such an undeserved reputation. But you make a good point about Godin. And you know what it's like? It's like if Brandon Crawford's batting 350 in the 8th spot at the beginning of the year, and you go,
do we move him up?
Yeah, do we bat him 5th? You know, I mean, yeah,
it's
maybe
a good problem to have. Yeah, you know, he should have like a 4.5 ERA so we don't have to think about this.
Yeah, exactly. Come on, Godin. You know, stop being so good and just suck so we don't have to talk about maybe moving you up. No, but it's, you know, the thing is, throughout a 162-game season, someone's going to go down. someone's going to need a break. Someone's going to get a blister on their finger.
Yep.
And we're going to need Godin to step into that role at some point. And the fact is, he's showing the you know, he's showing the brass at the Giants that he's got the capabilities to pitch at any moment in any game for several innings or just one inning if you need it. And it's very good problem to have. And I'm sure Bochy and Sabian are well aware of what this guy's doing right now. And the time comes that we need him, I'm sure he'll be ready to rock. So it's a very good point to bring up. This guy's been a stud for us. All right, let's talk about what's coming up. We got some games in Toronto.
No. Yeah.
One good
Canada,
thing.
A little weird.
One good thing that I always look forward to when you play in Toronto, you know, the guys who sit behind home plate and wear the full umpiring gear. Have you seen these guys?
Yes.
And these guys are fantastic. So I'm really looking forward to I'm hopeful that they're going to be there because they don't go to every game. But if you haven't seen this, just go to YouTube and look up Toronto Blue Jays, like umpire guys or something like that. And maybe I'll post that on the Facebook or something like that. But these guys are awesome because not only do they wear full umpiring gear, but they basically they call every strike. Every time a ball gets fouled off, they stand up and pretend like they're throwing a ball back to the pitcher. It's a great shtick to do at a ball game, and these guys came up with a good one. So there you go. It's, you know, it's like the green men, and where is that? Well, who's the green men with the hockey? Who sit by the penalty box? Have you seen these guys?
No, I haven't. Yeah.
So there's a lot of like good stuff like this going around in professional sports, and this is one of the best ones. But then after that, we're going to go straight to Colorado for four games, and then come back home. So we'll probably need Godin in Colorado, just because that's the way it works out when you get there. You need your
and it's
your
four
whole
games.
Staff.
Yeah, no, that's a rough one.
It's a long series in Colorado. And it's a good time to have 13 pitchers on the team if you can. Of course, that's not where we're at right now because we just made a move, and we'll talk about that. We should talk about that move. Have we not talked about that move?
Oh yeah, I did. No. It's
so Peguero goes down and Brett Pill comes up.
Brett Pill's hit like 47 RBI in 32 games.
Let me take a look.
He's leading all of professional baseball in RBI.
Yeah, I love Brett Pill, by the way, and I'm really hopeful that, you know, he puts it together because the guy has been around for a little while now.
He's
not an especially young guy. He's 28 years old, so it's time to hit your stride or hang it up potentially soon here. And 47 RBIs, 9 home runs, 13 doubles, batting .341 with a slugging percentage of .675, OPS of 1.054.
Ooh, OPS over 1,000.
Yeah.
That's ecstatically
strong,
amazing.
That is strong.
AAA.
He's wearing out AAA. Now, what you hope that you don't get is you don't get the guy that we know very well as Giants fans, the guy who wears out AAA and then can't hit at the big league level. So we're hopeful that that's not who we're going to get right now when Brett Pill comes up. But, you know, he's looked good in stints here, and the problem has always been just too many first basemen in front of him. So,
yep.
You know, we'll see what we get this time around. But I think that we're going to see a lot of him in pinch hit situations because of how hot his bat has been down there. So right now our pinch hitters have been guys like, you know, Torres or Blanco, depending on who's starting. We've had Peguero hit a lot. We had Noonan hit a lot. But I'd love to see Brett Pill because strong right-handed hitter who can hit a ball out at any time. So this will be fun. This will be fun to watch. We're all rooting for him. All right, let's tweet at me, brah. I got one here. This is somebody who's a fan of, I think, The Instance, and hit me up on Twitter. Oh, you know what? I should give a shout-out, too, also to Danny from Two Guys, a Glove, and a Coke Bottle. We use a soundbite on The Instance, and, Chad, you probably heard it. We open the show with it now, where somebody says, Horde side.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yes, yes.
That's his brother.
What?
That's Danny. That's Danny's brother. Yeah.
Okay, I did not know that. I heard that this week.
Apparently, that's his brother. He tweeted at me. He said, "Hey, you know that Horde side thing? Yeah, that's my brother." And I was like, "What?" I was like, "Yeah, he's famous." I guess he always has listened to the show, so he always knew about the show. But
oh my god,
I guess he sent that in at some point, and Scott loved it. So, but I'm gonna do my tweet at me, bro, with this one, which is from Kyle Conaway, at Kyle Conaway, who says, "Hey, Willie Dills. I love you and all, but your Giants, your hashtag Giants, can go straight to hell. Hashtag go Braves. Hashtag tomahawk chop for life. Sorry, buddy. Yeah, I know you're bitter, and I get it. I mean, you won that first game, then you lost three, but at least you know you still love me, so that's good to know.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, fine, be a Braves fan, but don't be a fan of the damn tomahawk chop.
No, that when he said tomahawk chop for life, was like, that's like, you know.
It's like being a fan of the wave.
I'm a fan of the wave.
Jesus.
I'm a fan of implied racist cheers at sporting events.
I like those big inflatable things I hit against one another during games.
Hey. You know, the thing is like, I'm okay with the Braves being called the Braves and the Indians being called the Indians and the Redskins being called the Redskins and all that's fine. But, you know, when you actually start, like, taunting.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the worst chant ever. I hate it. It needs to stop real quick.
I want to scalp him.
Like, you know, the rally monkey, that thing went away fast.
Oh,
how
it
come
was
this thing
like
stuck around?
Years.
How come this thing stuck around? I don't get it. I guess when you win like 14 NL East titles in a row, they figure it works, so they stick with it. But
you know what I love seeing every year is the Braves are in the playoffs almost every single year, and every single playoff, their stadium's like at 70-60% capacity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just beautiful. It's just beautiful to see that because the Giants have sold out 100-something consecutive regular season games.
Well,
you can't even imagine, even if the Giants ended up being crappy and only filling half their stadium, if they ever made the playoffs. Never would see that.
But Atlanta, it's, you know what it is, it's perpetual success, and it's bred a little bit of just malaise among the fan base. Like, they're just
okay. Well, here's the thing: the Braves won the World Series in 1995.
Yeah,
they've won only half the World Series the Giants have.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, as far as the last whatever decade.
It's Buffalo Bills success.
They had like 14 divisional titles in a row, so the Giants don't have that. But I'll take the two World Series.
I will take the two World Series as well.
Yeah. A little bit more important, but yeah, it's like they get into this expectation that the Braves will win the World Series or they'll make the playoffs. I won't go now. And then even when the playoffs hit, though, they don't come.
Yeah, and then they bust out in the 5-game series at the beginning, and then you didn't get to go. So. Yeah, guys, go.
Sorry, see Bravos. Your team.
Go see your team. Seriously. Don't expect it's going to happen every year, you know, because it won't. Don't be the Nationals and sit your best pitcher because you think that you're going to just win it all anyway. Okay?
Yeah, thank you, Washington. Giants, thank you.
By the way, I think I want to go back and find it when I said that. Like, that was my new favorite guy, and that was also the guy I should hate or something. So it's like, thank you for kicking the Nationals right
into
the playoffs.
Had that series against the Cardinals.
Oh, absolutely, dude. They destroyed
not
the Cardinals.
Not only even
if they
without Strasburg, they, what, they had that 6-run lead in that game five.
No, but if you put Strasburg and Gio Gonzalez and all those guys all up to, you know, the Cardinals don't win. The Cardinals do not win that.
And then if they don't win, then the Nationals play the Giants. Yeah. And you know what?
And who knows? Who
maybe the Giants
knows?
Don't beat the Nationals.
Exactly. I can't remember the last time the Giants played well against the Nationals. That's a scary team. All right, let's move on. What's your tweet at me, bro?
Okay, so you just talked about two guys, a glove and a Coke bottle. So I have one from Hammerhead T.
Oh, Thomas, yeah, the other one.
Exactly, Thomas. And he says, why didn't we think of that?
What would
us?
He be referring to?
And he was referring to the fact that after 47 episodes, we decided to go ahead and put our podcast on YouTube. Why not?
Why not? It's a good call. And I think the next step is let's start putting full video versions of this thing up and and go ahead and use Google Plus and record these.
You don't want to see video of me, man.
Are you sure?
It's not a good thing.
I think when everybody...
I don't have a good look going here.
When I start slurring at the end of a 2-hour podcast where gay marriage becomes the hottest topic on the Giants podcast,
whoa.
I think everyone wants to see that. I think they all wanted to see that.
That was it was a good discussion, though. It was.
Yeah, you know, we actually, what was funny is after we did that show and, like, I realized how actually kind of drunk I'd gotten. Like, I didn't notice. I was just kind of talking,
dude.
You know?
Dude, we went, like, 2 hours. And then, that was the same thing.
And then I realized, like, oh, my God, I'm so drunk right now. And then, I didn't even mean to do that. I just made one more big margarita after having another big margarita.
Ooh, margarita, too. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And And then I realized, and then I was like, oh man, people are going to like give us negative feedback. We got like three or four like really positive tweets about that show, saying like they're really happy to hear us kind of talk about some real subjects and get really in depth about them. So that was good. So that is something that we will bring up now at the end of every show as well, that you can find us now on YouTube. And not only do we have the episodes there, but we also have a bunch of those videos that we posted from when we did Media Day. And some of those, I think the Tim Lincecum ones had like 6,000 plus views.
Yeah, so, it's over 6K now.
So people have checked that out for sure. And that's really cool to know that people have watched some of that stuff, because that was a lot of fun for us. And we're looking forward to doing that hopefully every year from here on out.
Oh, yeah.
All right. New favorite guy time. Chad.
All right. So not only is this episode about Panda, number 48.
That's true.
But he had an incredible week with a couple of home runs, hitting well above 350. And for Mother's Day yesterday, he not only had the pink bat, the pink batting gloves, the pink wristbands, the pink shoes, he also painted his fingernails pink.
Wow. That's
so that dedication. Was pretty cool.
That's dedication to your mom.
I don't know why he went that far, but
because Panda goes that far. That's just how, you know.
It's like, dude, you're wearing your batting gloves. You wear a glove on the field, but you know what? He did it. He showed it off, and kudos to him. And he ended up hitting that bomb into the cove with his pink bat. So
you know what though? When Panda does anything, he does it all the way. I mean,
when he shakes your hand, he just threw himself into it.
He doesn't just shake your hand. He's got to, like, you know, rub your belly and, like, slap it with both hands on the same side and then do something with, you know, he's got to give you a salute and touch the back of your head. And, you know, he does it big, so.
Yeah, there's guys on the Giants I would love to go, like, you know, have a beer with. You know, to be honest, Buster Posey's not one of them.
No, honestly, I would love to kick it with Buster Posey, but I think if I'm going to go have a beer and really, like, let loose and relax.
Yep.
Yeah, I think Pablo is at the top of that.
I think Pablo's up there.
Yeah. Pablo's definitely at the top of that list. Actually,
I think Buster's going to be a little dry.
He might be a little dry. I think Brandon Belt might be at the top of my list, though.
He might be up there, too. Yeah, his dry witness.
I just think he'd be hilarious. Yeah. I don't want to, like, go out, like hard partying with Brandon Belt.
Hey, Brandon, can I take you out to Olive Garden for some breadsticks?
I want to sit at a bar for, like, 6 hours and, like, nail my elbows to the bar and just kick it with Brandon Belt for six hours. That's what I want to do. And just, like, watch baseball. All right, let's see. My new favorite guy, Scudero, who's finding his groove again. Back to hitting over 305. And, you know, I mean, all of us here, he became a local hero last year in half a season, and now we get him for at least two more, if not three more seasons, depending on what they do after the first two of this contract. I think we're going to see him for the full three, but it's just fun to watch him playing well. It's fun, you know, he's in such fantastic. An important part of the lineup, that number two hole, especially when you have someone like Pagan hitting first who can actually, I mean, he's kind of a real prototypical leadoff hitter, which we haven't had in a long time, and it's good to have that guy behind him that can make that hurt, you know, add on to that and then set the table for the big guys. And so we need him to be solid for the year. And it's really fun to watch him do it. And it helps us so much when he's hitting the ball. So Scudero, big ups. Welcome back, buddy. We missed you. All right. Let's hate on somebody. I'm going to go first because I think I want to talk about yours for a little bit. Let's hate on Milky Cabrera because we get two games to watch him. We don't get to watch him here, but we get to
Well, we will eventually.
Yeah. Well, you know what's good is actually we're going to give him his ring in Toronto, so he's not going to have to get booed while he gets his World Series ring, which would be a little awkward.
That's a good move.
Yeah, and I don't think they're going to do any pomp and circumstance or anything.
No.
As they give him this World Series ring. It's just going to be like kind of in the dugout. Here you go. Congratulations, you got your ring. But, you know, we did not pay $8.5 million for a guy who's hitting 261 and, you know, 12 RBIs and one home run. And
yep.
So thank God for that. We paid basically way less than that for two guys who seem to be doing just as well as he's doing. So feeling real good about that decision by Brian
feeling
Sabian.
Feeling no problems now. Not only is Toronto really struggling with the amazing lineup they were supposed to have had and the pitching, but yeah, Melky, I mean, he has picked it up as of late. He was hitting like 220 as of a week and a half ago, but
yeah,
you know, yeah, but he's still hitting 261 with one bomb and 12 ribbies. That's it. And he's played every game.
Yeah, I think every at this point for us, he was batting like 400 or close to, you know.
Yeah.
And I guess PEDs really do make a difference, man. I guess
well,
they do.
Well, you know, we paid for a guy who was juicing. So, hey, yeah. It worked out.
We got the nice, juicy version of Melky Cabrera for half a year, and then...
Toronto has the dry version.
And then Toronto gets the dry
version. They have the vegan Melky.
Oh, man.
The non-alcoholic Melky.
We squeezed all the juice right out of him, and then we gave it all to you. And so enjoy that, Canada. Enjoy that. All right, let's talk about your guy that we should hate, because I like this pick, because it gives us a chance to talk to him, even, you know. To talk about him and what happened recently.
Yeah, so obviously Matt Kemp is a target for most Giants fans. And, you know, in the past, he hasn't been that bad of a guy. He's even said some good things about the Giants in the All-Star game last year, and he gave a lot of respect to them and the whole thing. So, I mean, there's been flashes in the past, despite his grudges, where you're like, you know what? He seems like a nice guy. He just happens to have been signed by the Dodgers, which sucks.
Yeah.
He's like, he'd be great as a Giant.
If this guy was a Giant, I would be absolutely in love with Matt Kemp. I would love this dude.
Seems like a really nice guy.
Well, he would be fantastic in center field for the San Francisco Giants.
But, absolutely. So the Dodgers get swept, you know, what, last week, 8 days ago? It's after Sunday. They get swept. They're coming off the field.
In San Francisco, by the way.
In San Francisco at AT&T Park. And he had heard about, apparently, a cancer patient sitting in one of the luxury boxes down on the field, and that he only had like a month or two to live. So he walked over, and there's this great video taken by the person that
I think it was the kid's friend. Yeah.
Yeah, it was the friend or his dad or was caring for him.
So
or,
I think the dad and the friend like somehow got word to, I think they did it through like throughout the game, like got word to him through like the third base coach or something.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Like they were basically talking to the third base coach of the Dodgers saying, hey, you know, we really want my friend to meet Matt Kemp here. His name is Josh.
Yeah, and, Josh.
Yeah. And, you know, he's got like a month and a half to live, you know. And so, yeah, go ahead. Continue.
So Matt comes over and, you know, there's this video of him and, you know, taken with an iPhone or whatever. And, you know, he grabs the ball and he signs it. And it's like, wow, that's really cool. And then I really do believe it was a genuine, spontaneous moment.
I don't think he planned to do.
No,
maybe he thought he was going to. But I think when he got over there, he just realized, well, this isn't that cool, just giving you a ball.
Yeah. Like, I give balls to people all the time.
Yeah.
For people who are going to live another 50 years.
Yeah.
So he proceeds to give him his cap, then take off his jersey, which his T-shirt said beast mode underneath, which was kind of cool.
Well, yeah, that's like
and
a thing.
And then he takes off his spikes.
Yeah. Gives the kid his shoes.
He takes off his cleats.
Yeah.
And he literally gives this kid his hat, his jersey, and his spikes with the signed ball.
Yeah.
And this kid is just stunned.
Well, the kid can't talk.
Yeah, no,
like literally, he can't talk.
Bad. Yeah, he can't talk, but the expression you can tell.
Yeah, he's like he's just
he's comprehending what's going on
right now. Yeah,
yeah. So I mean, just to see that he's literally standing. Matt Kemp is standing on the warning track dirt in his socks.
Yeah,
this multi-million-dollar baseball player is like, yeah, I'm cool. I'm just gonna go walk to the dugout on the dirt in my socks.
Yeah.
Take my shoes.
And what was really cool about it too was he didn't sit there and then try to make a big deal about like,
no,
hey, everybody check out what I did. Like, you know, the fact is somebody ended up filming it.
And Matt had no idea what was going to happen.
But he, you know, I don't even think Matt, if you look at the video, I don't think he looked at the camera. Like,
no,
I'm sure he knew that the guy was taking pictures. Who knows if he knew it was a video?
Yeah.
I don't think this was ever any piece of this was done to like give himself publicity. I think it was literally to just do a nice thing for somebody who may not have long to live, and this could be something that this kid could feel good about when he's going through a really rough time. So huge, huge kudos to Matt Kemp for this, because this was just, I mean, I watched it and I'm just sitting there like, man, that's really cool. Like,
You're waiting for like Matt Kemp's, you know, PR guy to pop up going, all right, good job, Matt.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, he did this just totally off the cuff. And you just got to say, you know what? Not everyone who wears a Dodger uniform is a bad guy, you know? And so we got to give him his props, because that was pretty amazing.
I give him his props for sure. And I mean, come on. We know that some guys who went over there, like, say, maybe Jeff Kent, Bill Miller,
Brett Butler,
Jason Schmidt. You know, I mean, a lot of these guys went over there, and that
was a lot of ex-Giants. It's
painful, but you know, those guys were fine when they were here. And
Tim Lincecum. Oh wait, what?
Oh, I'm sorry, Tim Lincecum.
I'm from the future. I didn't mean to tell you that.
But you notice too that Matt Kemp seems to be dogging it lately when he comes over here and plays against the Giants. Maybe he's secretly helping us. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, he's only got one bomb this year. So.
Yeah. I know. He's just having a rough season. But I saw actually something. Someone had put a picture up on Reddit in the SF Giants subreddit that said it showed a picture of him in front of his locker. And there was a Buster Posey bobblehead in his locker. I swear to God. Now, maybe Buster just like gave it to him before the game or something. But
yeah, right.
Yeah. But. You know what? Matt Kemp's got to end up a Giant. He's got to. It's just got to happen. We've given them so much over the years, and all they gave us was Oral Hershiser at the very end of his career. So we need more out of the Dodgers. They need to give us – if they give us Matt Kemp, all is forgiven. Actually, if they give us Matt Kemp, rivalry over. Rivalry over. We don't care anymore. We'll take back everything we ever did. Juan Marichal will apologize again over and over profusely. All of it is forgiven. But yeah, so anyway, big ups Matt Kemp. It's usually not how we don't usually gush over people during the We Hate This Guy segment, but this time we will. All right, and let's also gush about why we will win it all. So Chad, start us off, because I'm going to actually piggyback on yours.
Yeah, so Vogelsong obviously is struggling. They're not going to replace him anytime soon. Nope. They even talked about skipping his next start, but in the last few days, it's come out that no, indeed, they are not going to skip his next start, even though they could, because they have the off day they could work with, where they could skip him and he could take, you know, 9 days off. They're not doing that. So if Vogie doesn't turn it around by the All-Star break or by the trade deadline, and he still has an ERA above 6 or 7, I think they have to pull the trigger. I think they have to at least, you know, a shot for that veteran who may still have a 4 ERA, but that's 50% better than Vogie, and that could translate into 1 or 2 or 3 more wins in the second half. And
now, but do we take a chance on? Do we take a chance on somebody, take a flyer on somebody, and try to keep Vogelsong? Do you think that potentially could be the way they go?
I still think they keep Vogelsong.
Yeah, I don't think that we trade
as
Vogelsong.
Long relief. Yeah, No. I don't think they trade him. I think they keep him in. And they demote him. And I hate to say that, but you know, as far as strictly a business and numbers, if he is halfway through the season with a 6.5 ERA, I mean, you can't keep with him. You can't.
No,
you can't. If they're
not, if you're trying to win it all. Yeah.
If there's someone out there that is an improvement, which right now Vogelsong has the highest ERA of all starters who qualify.
Well, okay. So
great title. So there's got to be someone better than him.
Well, in that situation, like let's say you don't have to give up a lot for another guy who's struggling in a huge way, but who may be able to turn it around once he changes uniforms. Like what if you're looking at someone like Halliday? You know, like the Phillies could
they've
easily
even talked
be sellers.
About Cliff Lee.
Yeah, no, Cliff Lee would be someone we'd have to give up something for.
Oh yeah, no doubt. They'd have to give up a lot.
Yeah, but when you're talking about the Phillies, they could easily be sellers again, the same way they were last season. Yeah, because they've still got a fairly high payroll. They've got this older team. If they don't have it put together, they're not a team that's set up for a big run down the stretch. You know, and. To the way it looks right now, they could be one of the big time sellers at the trade deadline.
Oh yeah.
So I could easily see, and the thing is like Halliday, the way he is right now, this part of the season, and obviously been hurt. No, but he's got, you know, a month or so to kind of put himself back together. We start to get closer to the trade deadline. Maybe he has like 1 or 2 decent starts.
Yeah, if he has a couple of decent starts, I think he's trade fodder.
Yeah, absolutely.
Obviously, if he doesn't, you know, the Giants
just
shouldn't touch him.
Based on reputation alone, I think he's the kind of guy you change his uniform, you get him out of Philly where everybody screams and yells at you every time you have one bad start, and who knows, he could just find it. He could find it again. I mean, obviously the guy knows how to pitch. So, yeah, I mean, there's a couple of names. Maybe we should actually put that together as we get closer to the trade deadline, the guys that we think we would fit in.
I mean, you know, we all don't want this. We love Vogie and we want him to succeed. But, you know, a guy who's 1-3 with a 7.7 ERA, you just kind of got to look at that and go, you know what? That's just it's not going to do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Continue this way.
No, it's just absolutely not. And the thing is, I'm going to piggyback on yours. This is why we win it all, because we have bullets in the chamber besides who we have right now. We've got some guys in the minor leagues who are kind of clearly shown that they could be major league talent. We've got some players we can move because of the fact that we're defending champions and we want to defend this championship and try to actually really make a run at another title. Now, while we've got this core group of guys together, you know, and try to really make a dynasty thing, we've got some guys here that may not really have a place on this team in the near future who could easily be. And I think Gary Brown is kind of off the table, but you look at maybe like a guy like Hector Sanchez. He's a guy who's struggled here, but there's plenty of teams that we're looking for a young catcher who's got a lot of upside, you know? And you look at like a guy like Peguero, Brett Pill, like if you know, maybe these guys don't have long-term futures here, but these are definitely guys that other teams would be interested in having. So there's some guys we can move around. And, you know, I think the only guy that you really don't touch right now is Gary Brown. Is there anybody else that we have in the minor leagues that we're kind of projecting as a future star in the big leagues? You know, I don't think there really is.
No, I don't think so.
I think that's the one guy you don't. And then we've got a couple other guys who are potential solidifiers to some other teams in a couple of years who – these guys, you know, once these teams become bona fide sellers, once they get to that point where, you know, we know we're not going to do it this year, so it's time to reload, then those guys become options because you're looking a couple years down the road if you're the other team. So I think there's definitely some moves that can be made, and we have the ability and the general manager to make these moves, and we have the deep enough minor league system right now, even though there's – it's not been as deep as it was maybe 3 or 4 years ago, but all those guys are here now, you know. So, but it's deep enough that we can make some moves. One more reason I'm going to say why we win it all, and that is because I found this. Now I'm going to knock on wood, and I suggest everybody else out there knock on wood right now as well. But I found this article in the New York Times. Now this is a fun little article too, because not only is it show you a really cool little stat, but it also is interactive and it continues to count as you are on this page. This is most money on the bench. So these are the teams with the most money on the disabled list as of May 13th. All right. So check this out. Number one, the New York Yankees. They have 11 players.
That's exactly what I would have guessed. Yeah,
they have 11 players totaling $100.6 million, which is 44% of their payroll.
Okay, but how many teams does that beat in terms of total payroll?
Beats. I know exactly. That's insane. That's nuts. So they got A-Rod, Teixeira, Jeter, Granderson, Euclid, Jody Chamberlain. You know, some of these like smaller names, but a ton of injuries they've had already. Right. Second on this list. So if you look at it too, the amount paid to these players on the disabled list so far today, and right now at 10:45 p.m. Pacific time, that number is $524,000. Today, they paid these guys. That's crazy.
Wow.
That's crazy.
$500,000 today for sitting on
today. Yeah. All right, so the Los Angeles Dodgers are second on this list with $69.2 million and 9 players. So you got Greinke, Ramirez, Ted Lilly, Billingsley, Mark Ellis, Hairston. You know, it's ridiculous. Blue Jays are next. Josh Johnson and Reyes basically make up the bulk of that. Then you got the Cardinals with Carpenter, Westbrook, and Furcal. New York Mets is basically all just Santana. But you go down this list, you also got the A's on there, but Coco Crisp about to come back. I mean, Chris Young, both 15-day disabled. These aren't like big-time injuries. Whereas like Rodriguez and Teixeira and Jeter are all in the 60-day, you know.
Yeah.
So then you go down the list. You keep on going. Still not seeing the Giants. Very bottom of the list. The only list you don't want to be at the top of is the Giants are on this with two players totaling $1 million, and those two players are Tony Abreu and Eric Sercamp, who wouldn't be on the team anyway. Neither of these guys.
They're 30th?
Yes, the Giants are absolute dead last.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah, the only team. Yeah, close to us is the Astros, whereas the Astros, again, it's like guys who wouldn't be on the team really anyway.
It's got to be a hot button topic for KNBR.
Yeah.
Are you angry the Giants have two players on the docket for $1 million?
But not only that, but okay, Sercamp and Abreu are both considered to be on the 15-day disabled list. I mean, neither of these guys would be on the 25-man roster regardless.
No, they wouldn't.
So we basically have $0 on the disabled list right now.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, so it's a damn fun little stat. I think I posted this to our Facebook earlier. It's a really, really cool little thing. So another reason, knock on wood, why I win it all so far, we're at the bottom of that list. And if we're at the bottom of the list after a quarter of the year, it's pretty hard to make your way all the way to the top. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
Buster Posey gets run over again, and suddenly we're like fifth.
No, exactly. I guess that's true. Actually not even close, because he gets nowhere near as much as you look at the three guys that the Yankees have. I mean,
That's true. That's true.
No. So anyway, that's going to do it for episode 48, the Pablo Sandoval episode. Really fun episode, because the Giants are in first and the Dodgers are in last. And if you can't have fun while that's going on, then hell. It's time to just shoot yourself, yeah. I think, you know? So if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do so at TortureCast. That's all of us. We all tweet to that. If you want to follow each one of us individually, I am at Willie Dills. Chad is at ChadK21. Ben, who was not here tonight because he's actually had back spasms, unfortunately, and we need him to get off the DL. He's actually he's keeping our podcast actually at the top of that list, because we pay that guy like 30 mil
or something.
We pay that guy 30 mil a year. So he wasn't here tonight. So we're hoping that he gets better soon. We need him for the playoff stretch. And so hopefully he'll be back soon. And he is at Fried Duck. You can also go visit our blog, which is at torturecast.com. You can like us on Facebook. You can find us on Podomatic. You can donate using PayPal if you like what we're doing, and we would enjoy it if you do. You can also find us now on YouTube. So, Chad, where do they find us on YouTube?
YouTube.com/TortureCast. And if you go to TortureCast.com, there's also a bar at the top labeled YouTube, where we have all of our videos embedded.
All right. So that's pretty simple. Pretty easy to find. So everybody go out there and do that. Let's keep this going all the way through Toronto and Colorado. We'll see everybody next week. Again, another Monday show. Hopefully the Giants are in exactly the same position that we are now, first place. Thanks, everybody, for listening to episode 48 of the TortureCast. We'll see you next time. Boom. A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.